Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Solid but not spectacular might be the best way to sum up that performance against West Ham. A 3-0 win, even if it wasn't the most enthralling of games, but it keeps the pressure on Arsenal at the top of the Premier League table, with City just 2 points behind going into the festive period. We'll discuss that match on today's Blue Moon podcast shortly, but it seems like a lot of the stories around the club this week centre more on what's happening or not off the pitch. We'll hear what Pep Guardiola had to say when he was asked about his future after it was reported City were drawing up a contingency plan in case this was his last season. It's not Forest up next, so we'll hear from journalist and Forest fan Nick Miller about their frankly bizarre season so far. And with Christmas just around the corner, we'll take a look at all manner of stats surrounding City on the 25th of December. For one last podcast before being buried in mince pies and drowning in sherry, I don't even like either of those things, so I don't know why I mentioned them. I'm David Mooney. With me from Sporting News is Dom Farrell.
Hi David, I'm more of a port man than a sherry man, to be honest.
Port rather than sherry, yeah. But it's fine, it's festive. And from the Manchester Evening News, we've got Simon Bykowski. Hello, Simon. Port, sherry or mince pies, mate?
Oh, I feel like cyanide at the minute.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yes, hello.
Hello. I don't know whether this is the place to start, but how many kilos do you both intend to put on over Christmas, and will you be managing your kind of eating to avoid getting fatty, Dom?
I understand cyanide's very slimming, actually. Maybe that's worth giving that a bash. So the thing is, Guardiola said he's going to weigh them on the 25th. I mean, you know, It's good that a year on from him apologising to Samaritans about self-harm, he's now got into fat shaming. really, the things that go on in that press conference room. So they're weighing on the 25th of December. That's easy work, because the real danger zone is that post-Christmas, sort of those 4 or 5 days where every meal can be cheese-based, a pork product, and Christmas cake and selection boxes. That's where you put the real fatty work in, I think.
Yeah, there are some things that Guardiola says, because he's not a native English speaker, and there are some things that he says that you just think, I can't do anything with this but just leave it as is and let people have it for what it is. And they come fatty was certainly one of those quotes where he's just like, yeah, he said it, and I can't do anything with that, so there we are.
That's not going in the paper then, is it, Simon? I assume. I mean,
But you know, you just like, I'm not even going to try and sort of make it make more sense than it already does. Like Pep said those words, that's what he means. Everyone can interpret it how he likes. It does sound a particularly horrifying Christmas day for everyone.
Yeah, if anyone is lost about this, this was in the press conference after West Ham. The first question in this clip wasn't Simon's question, but I mean, Simon, you asked a delightful clarification in this that I think it needed to be asked. But it's the pause slightly after you've asked the question where he's processing what he needs to say.
Yesterday they have weight. Yesterday every player make a weight. You know, 25, I will be there controlling how many kilos come up. They come fatty.
Just on that last answer, Pat, they were weighed, were they, yesterday?
You know when you have how many kilos you have?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did it.
And they were all fat?
Everything perfect.
Right.
But fit.
There we go. I mean, it was that moment where he goes, I need a synonym for the word weight.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know any synonyms for the word weight.
Yeah. It was just a very weird press conference, full stop. I mean, I don't know if you've got the audio for the Nottingham Forest questions, but oh my word, it was just... And so basically, the you know, City have to do a press conference before Nottingham Forest, because it's a Premier League game, and they were going to tag it on the end of the West Ham game so that they didn't have to do one Christmas Eve or Boxing Day or whatever. And then the Premier League said, no, you can't. But they're basically not doing a press conference. So some poor soul, the Press Association specifically, try and get a Nottingham Forest answer from him. And he's just like, nope. No, not answering that. No, no, no. 7 days away. See you later. Don't care. And it's just like, ah, oh, he was very festive. Actually, he was in a very jovial mood.
Yeah. Well, I didn't clip that bit up, but obviously he said to Andy Hampson, "No, I'm not doing that." And he also criticised Jamie Jackson's jumper. So there was a wild ride for everybody in there. So I mean, it livened up, I would say, a pretty dull afternoon, because if we kind of segue into the game, Simon, it wasn't a classic, was it?
No. And it kind of, again, it was just kind of like peak Pep Guardiola, like City win. They don't play that well, but they win and they've won 3-0 and they're top of the table for the first time since the first day of the season. And then Pep uses the first part of his press conference to say they're rubbish, and if they don't follow me, they won't win the league, or they won't be even in contention by March. And then use the second bit to say, and if they come back even 1 kilo overweight on Christmas Day, they're not in the squad for Forest. It was like a tour de force of like, I am the master and you all have to listen to me. Yeah, it wasn't a great performance against a West Ham team who were pretty terrible. Mm. I mean, I feel like the third goal summed it up in like, how have two defenders contrived to sort of both touch the ball and it end up with Haaland 6 yards out?
Smashing it in from 5 yards. Yeah.
It was just like so bad. But, you know, I think better City teams than this have been much worse around this time of year under Guardiola. So, like, you definitely take a win at this time of year.
Yeah. Dom, in a weird way, do you think that they look a little bit tired? And I say that just because Guardiola's picked 10 of the same 11 for West Ham, Crystal Palace, Real Madrid, Sunderland, Fulham, Leeds, Newcastle and Liverpool. Only Leverkusen and Brentford had changes, and the only changes in that time for that main kind of 11-12 is Doku for either Reinders or Cherki.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be inevitable the tide, isn't it? Because he only likes about 12 players. And I mean, I wonder if the lads who played against Leverkusen and the lads who were playing all the time, what they're respectively allowed to eat over Christmas. Do you reckon if you're Rico Lewis, you might as well just get into the Yule log? That doesn't matter, does it? It's interesting because, like, on the one hand, there's this idea of, as Si just said then, that, like, City have played badly and just churned through points this time of year. It's kind of what they do. But what those good City teams were doing was he was just easily doing 3 or 4 changes every game and you sort of cycle through. And then Guardiola's thing is that when we are there in like November time, so not November time, sort of March time, and that's when he'll go, here are my good players, and then he has his favourites and they all play. So we're sort of in uncharted territory here, because you would imagine, I mean, I guess they look a bit tired at the moment. I feel like Nico O'Reilly looks exhausted most games now, but it's working well, and obviously he's got this side in a different stage of development to the other ones that have won the leagues, but I would be interested to see what sort of state they're in March.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, you think of the flow of the games at the minute, Simon, as well. Like the Christmas period is good for City in that there's time between the games, so he can get these players some rest. But then they have that run where it's kind of Forest, Chelsea, and Brighton all in quick succession, where he might not be able to do that anymore.
No, but I think the rest will do them good. And I think they've kind of been penciling this in for a long time. You know, this is kind of the bit in the calendar where they've like starred and asterisked it and said, this is where we can actually have some rest and get away from each other. And because it has been really long and tiring. And it like doing Madrid and Palace in the same week is rough. You know, as much as it's like, oh, the footballers and the chauffeured and get luxury travel, get over it. Like, it's still tiring and more tiring than it would be if the games were at home or anything like that. And I think they've just kind of been like, yeah, we only using the same 12 or 13 players to start, and we've got games every 3 days, but we just need to get to West Ham and then we can have a week off and everyone can go off and have a little Christmas break and then come back and we start again. And I think by the time...
With those same 12 or 13 players.
yeah. But at least they'll have had a break. But then January, like, I know you mentioned the 3 games at the start, but then it looks pretty pretty comfortable. I know there's a derby in there at Old Trafford, but like there's Exeter at home, there's Bodo. There is obviously the first leg of the Carabao Cup, Newcastle, but that's quite an exciting game because City haven't been in a League Cup semi for ages. So I think that this is just like a much needed rest. And I think the performance wasn't amazing against West Ham and there were a lot of tired players, but hopefully now they can recharge.
Yeah. As we said a bit earlier on, Dom, as well, he was quite critical of the performance. I mean, the message, Merry Christmas, but you need to get better, is kind of the way it sums up the way it kind of went in the press conference. And he's spoken about the build-up not being great recently. So, like, how do they improve that over the next few weeks? Is there are you seeing kind of developmental moments throughout the course of this season? Because the build-up hasn't been great all season, but maybe has been getting better.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a habit of journalists to sort of over-egg this bit of it, but I do think after years and years of listening to him, Guardiola does signpost these things in press conferences quite well. That, like, remember a month or 6 weeks ago where every presser he was talking about vibes and it was vibes and all positivity. Now, him going, you've won 3-0, but you're shite. That's definitely things are moving in the right direction because that's the sort of thing you say.
Like, I mean, feels he can do it, yeah.
Yeah. So if you look at, like, so Ryan Cherky, who has, you know, been in this run of wins, I think he'd get more games than not. He's been the best player on the pitch. Just looks phenomenal in so many different ways. So creative. Cherishes the ball in the way that, you know, Grealish used to when he was in his pomp for City. He's made a lot of things work a lot better, I feel. But So Cherky came on to try and see out that mad game at Fulham, and Guardiola waxed lyrical about how well he played, which he did in like an 8-minute cameo, but that did include a yellow card for like sconning the ball into the second tier of the stand to waste time. And he was like, Ryan was amazing. Now, every week he's man of the match, he's talking about all the things he can improve and this and that. A bit like how he was a lot more stick than carrot with Foden over the years. And it's like, also every week he talks about how brilliant Savinho's cameo is, which it isn't. So yeah, it feels more familiar than this sort of the midlife crisis vibes guy we had for a few months, and I think that's quite reassuring. In terms of the build up, again, I think Cherky and having guys like him in the team help that, because we can't beat around the bush here. The conventional build up they used to have that was so good with Edison just isn't possible now. To anywhere near the same level with Donnarumma. I mean, Donnarumma can, like, do... If he nails his rudimentary passes... Oh, there was that ball down the line for Doku at the Bernabeu that was kind of mad. But just on a basic level, he's going to play passes at the wrong speed, behind people, scuff them. It's what he does. And it's a bit of a... It's a chicken-egg thing, isn't it? Or a turkey and egg this time of year? He's a big guy. He can be a turkey. Those saves at the start of the second half are absolutely vital. And you need that. And it has got to a ridiculous point now with Donnarumma where people are sort of going, oh, would Edison have saved that? It's like, Edison did save some shots. It did happen. We can't say this for every single Donnarumma save, but those saves are brilliant and he's fantastic at that stuff. But I think it's definitely also fair to say that a side as poor as this West Ham team or as poor as that Leeds team were in the first half against City, they're only getting a sniff in the first place to make those saves possible because the build-up isn't there. So, yeah, they've kind of just got to find different ways of doing it. And I think at the moment, having as many people in the team, with Cherky as a symbol of this a bit, who can take the ball under the most pressure possible, that's vital. And having those guys wherever they can be on the pitch, whereas previously it was, everything just works smoothly, like through the lines of the team. Now it's like, you need guys who can take, quite frankly, a shite pass from the goalie under loads of pressure and make the best of it, because those are a thing in the City team where they haven't been previously.
Yeah, Donnarumma, Simon, didn't get singled out for any mention in the press conference, so Guardiola didn't talk about him. And Dom's kind of summed it up quite nicely there, because there were some excellent saves, especially at the second half. But There was a couple of great balls out to Nunes on the right-hand side in the second half, but in the first half, he absolutely wellied one out of play looking for Nico O'Reilly. So it, like, you don't really know what you're going to get, do you?
Yeah, and I think that's it. It's that unpredictability of what is coming that isn't kind of conducive to a smooth rhythm and build-up. I do think, as well, part of the problem in recent games is that Bernardo Silva has looked very tired and... You know, Cherky's look great, but Bernardo kind of does a lot of Cherky's defensive work for him, as he kind of flits around playing 83 positions, and he's been not great. Fantastic from Pep as well, by the way, saying, you know, oh, Bernardo's my favourite, he's my weakness, but he wasn't good. It's like, yeah, Pep does read all your tweets. Yeah. I think when you have kind of arrested Bernardo Silva, I think that will help the build up. But it is just one of those trade offs you're going to have to accept with Donnarumma. And to be fair, he got a tiny mention in the press conference in terms of saying if he hadn't made that save at 2-0, West Ham would have made it 2-2, which was kind of like, the team are not yet stable enough to survive opponents coming back at them and putting them under pressure and things like that, which again is a sign perhaps of where Pep thinks the team is, but also just a sign of the strength that Pep is able to sort of talk about the weaknesses of the team when they've just won the seventh game in a row.
On that Donnarumma thing, and we're in a second language here and it's not like my Catalan's any good, but he doesn't know what a magician is, does he? He said, I'm not a magician to know the future. That's a fortune teller. That's like, and he said this about magicians quite a lot. And every time I'm like, that's not what a magician does, Pep. It's not.
Raise it.
Yeah. I'll, next time Jamie wears a ridiculous jumper, I'll be sure to bring it up.
Just a quick word on the goals as well, Simon. You mentioned Haaland already. He scored twice. He looked very pissed off about the service towards the end.
Yeah. Both of those true. Yeah, congratulations. it didn't feel like the team were as good as they could be at getting service to him. I wonder if he's possibly missing Jeremy Doku, and I didn't think I'd be ever saying those words, but such has this season been. But Doku's just been so much better this year at finding him in the box. And I mean, the first goal is really good from Foden in the sense of he could play Haaland through and Haaland's a bit frustrated. And then he sort of finds, he delays it and finds himself in a better position to be able to play Haaland through. And again, like, you know.
Still took two finishes though, didn't he?
What are you doing? What are you doing letting him have two finishes in the box, both unmarked? Like, this is a Nuno team. I think Haaland as well has not been as good as he has been in, you know, certainly was a month or two ago, and Pep spoke after the Bernabeu game saying, you know, we need to involve him more in the play and get back to that. But when he's scoring two goals, you kind of think, well, yeah.
Five, yeah.
Yeah, 150 goals for City now, which is obscene. I think it'll be like fourth on the list of all time by January.
Got no history, mate. That's why.
Yeah.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Dom, I've written here, and I must confess, I wrote this about 2 in the morning.
You don't have to read this out.
I've written Tijani the blue-shirted Rinders, which it seemed like a good pun at like 2 a.m., but maybe not. I've had a long week. Yeah, I've had a long week. Good finish, though. Yeah. It's nice that he's starting to chip in with goals.
Yeah, I love Roof in a finish. Always good. Always very, very pleasing. I think he's been a bit of a victim of no one knew quite how bad this Wolves team was when he rocked up for that debut. He turned up as Zidane at Molineux, and they said, well, actually, the context here that we don't know yet is this is the worst team that's ever played in the Premier League. But, you know, you can only beat what's in front of you.
Derby, that terrible Derby team that finished on 11 points had 9 points at Christmas.
What wasn't one of the points they got after Christmas against City as well, I believe?
Oh, it was. Yeah. Spence City won all at Pride Park. Yeah.
Well played, lads. So I think, obviously, it's been done to death, this thing about the second season under Pep and what last season's sort of mayhem in terms of the general development of the squad means for that with players who've been here a year already. Throw in the fact that central midfielders is like something he's so, so precious about. Like, even if you look back to Bernardo started playing in the right wing, Foden, it was like, you know, we're only just getting to Foden playing centrally now, and then at the weekend he's kind of a bit on the wing. And, you know, but he had De Bruyne and Gundogan and David Silva for a bit, and then Bernardo, and he had his guys he trusted in the middle, and buying central midfielders to go in there and play. I mean, Nunes is having a great time at right back now. Bought a central midfielder for 50 million quid. He decided he didn't fancy him. So it is quite rare for a new midfield signing like Reinders to have had so much time in that position. Hopefully that pays off down the line. Because I think, so with the chipping in with the goals, arriving in the box and having a bit of a finish on him is clearly something that's part of what he does. I do think it's sometimes quite alarming when they're, because to go back to what you said about the problems with the build-up, there's been a few games where they've been under pressure and not able to get out. And he's kind of just a bit of a non-entity in terms of, you know, just those little put the ball in the fridge passes you're playing, like take a ball, give a 5-yard pass. He doesn't really have the feel for doing that yet. And I'm sure that'll come. But if while he's doing that, he can keep chipping in, then all good.
Yeah. The best bit of the goal, though, unfortunately for Reinders, Simon, even though the finish was emphatic, it was Cherky's tackle turn skill that made it.
Yes. Yeah, he's had a very good few weeks since Fulham, since that boot into the stands. He's
that was the spark. Just like,
yeah. but like Dom has said, he's just been the best player on the pitch. And even when, you know, it felt like he started against Leeds a few weeks ago to sort of creating small spaces, and it didn't really happen. But then as soon as Leeds opened up in the second half to get back into it, it was Cherky who said, right, I'm going to be the chief creator and take things on. And he, you know, the Rabona came, and he just looks really good. And even, I think today or last night, he on his Instagram, he's on a cycle bike in his house, and it's kind of like,
I enjoyed Guardiola saying don't get fat, and then immediately him posting a yes. Peloton video here.
Yeah. But you know, he came to City, and there was certainly some noise of, oh, his work ethic isn't great, his attitude isn't good, and his fitness and all this, and there's been none of that really. He has, like, he looks like a real pro, and he is, you know, really trying to make it work, and he's doing it. Like, he just looks so settled in the Premier League, which, again, to say he is very, very, very young. And Guardiola said on Friday, like, I don't want to give him too many compliments because I know how good he can be. And it is kind of like Sane and Foden territory where it could be one of those players where, like, you know, flair player comes to Guardiola and just explodes and is unbelievable in a way that no other manager could make him that. And yeah, he looks like he's going to have a big part to play in the second half of the season. But he's just so fun, isn't he? He's great to watch as well.
So
everyone loves watching him.
Yeah. Dom, you said you love a good roofed finish. I'm going to put you on the spot now. Best roof finish you've seen?
It's probably Aguero against Liverpool, isn't it? The near post one. He did a fine line in them. I think there was one in a derby he scored that was similar as well. I'll go with that one. Just because it was such an angry finish as well, because he thought he should have had a penalty, so he just then just battered the ball with his wrong foot, which if he was thinking, clearly he never would have done. But yeah, that's a glorious one.
Yeah, you wouldn't get this line properly in commentary, and we're straying into cliches territory here, but he took the roof of the net off with that finish.
Wow.
Yeah. let's talk about the other story that's been dominating this week, and it broke annoyingly not long after we'd released and recorded the last episode of the podcast. On Thursday, The Athletic's David Ornstein reported that City were drawing up plans in case Guardiola decided to call it a day at the end of the season. And if he did, Chelsea boss Enzo Maresca was high up in their thinking. Then on Friday, Guardiola spoke to the media ahead of the game with West Ham.
Well, the last 3 or 4 years, every time in a certain period, asked me about that question. So yeah, sooner or later, I don't know, with 75 or 76, I will quit from Manchester City. But I understand that question when I have an end of a contract, but I have, you said perfectly, 18 months. So I'm so delighted, happy. I was excited with the development of the team and being there. That is only I can say. So, but you know, that question happened every single season at certain point. So I'm okay. So when I said many times, the club and myself, we are incredible connected, and in terms of the decision what we have to take, and whatever is going to happen is going to happen.
Guardiola has another year on his contract after this season, and so far in his career he hasn't ended a contract early, so should he decide to go this coming summer, it would be the first time it has ever happened. With that in mind, he was asked directly if he was planning to be in charge at the beginning of next season.
I answered that question two questions before, so I'm here.
So yes.
So I'm here. What's going to happen? Who knows that? Who knows? But even if I have 10 years contract or I have 6 months contract. So football changed a lot. So now I'm focusing on West Ham and go a few days with my dad, and that's all.
You can hear his frustration, but you can also see why the question needed asking, because he still didn't explicitly say yes or no. So the questions kept coming in various different forms, so he kept answering.
I'm happy here. I want to stay here. What can I say? When the club myself or the results, because at the end it's always the results, decide it's at the end of the chapter, the club will choose the best one, you know, to continue this incredible period in Man City. Have been the rumors for the last years many, many times. So, and what can I say? I want to stay here. So, and the answer is always here.
There were also questions about if he would help choose the next City manager when his time at the club did come to an end, and about how he would know if it was the right time to finish.
Last season was a really, really tough season, and I didn't give up, and I was there. And this season is much better in terms of many things I see, and still I'm here. It depends on my feelings. My feeling is, right now is good, so that's why I wanna continue. It's going to change, maybe. So I don't know, but now it's what I'm feeling. Now is not. I'm gonna with that players continue as much longer as possible. But I said the club has to be prepared, but have been prepared in the past with Chicky, because I'm a weird guy. Maybe when we wake up in the morning, I said I'm leaving. Ciao ciao. So they have to be prepared, but it's not the case.
This was all before the West Ham game, and then in the press conference after it, there was perhaps the clearest indication that he didn't think much of the rumours that he was going to leave at the end of the season, because as we've said already, it was a bit of a weird press conference, and we haven't even mentioned this bit.
I just wanted to ask you, talking about you telling the players that, you know, it needs to be more to get over the line. Is that what you were saying to Guardiola at the end on the pitch? You were having a very animated conversation?
Yeah, we talk about how it's Croatia for the holidays. I'm going to see my dad a few days, 94 years old, and after I go to Croatia, some beaches. And that's why I ask where I have to go. Do you like the answer?
Good.
It's not true, but it doesn't matter, right?
There we go. So that's everything that's happened off the pitch this week. Simon, did the questions keep coming to him? Because he kept dropping in things like, I won't be here forever, or who knows what's going to happen, or at the end of the season, we'll see, or maybe that feeling's going to change. It's because he's kind of left the door a little bit open there, like everybody goes, well, what did you mean by that?
Yeah, and I think you always think, you know, different ways of asking a question might get a different answers, and often they do. And then you can kind of try and get a sense of the full picture from all the different answers combined together. And, you know, it seemed like he was saying that he probably will stay, but he's not going to come out and say that he definitely will stay.
Because he might still change his mind.
yeah. But this is why I kind of, you know, I saw the story and I was like, all right. Mm. I'd be very surprised if he knows already 100% what he's going to do, because that's not been the case in the first 10 years of his time at City.
Yeah. Dom, like the wider aspect of the story as well is Maresca's recently changed agents. There's been stuff that he's been saying in press conferences about it being things like the worst 48 hours he's had at Chelsea and that he's not been feeling supported. It's just a very weird week, really, with this, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, so the change of agents is to Jorge Mendes, right? And Mendes is good mate of Hugo Viana, and a lot of people have put two and two together there, and, you know, crack on if that's what you wish to do. I mean, obviously, Maresca is well thought of a City from the job he did with the EDS, and then he was Pep's assistant in the treble season. So, undoubtedly, he would be... You know, we know that they have lists for, like, every position they might try and buy a player in. It absolutely figures they would have a list ever-evolving for as and when Pep goes. I mean, the most pertinent bit of all those clips was when he says, I'm a weird guy and I might just decide, nah, one day. And I think he's always been fairly upfront, like with all the conversation around every previous contract extension. That is kind of the case. So, yeah, they'll undoubtedly have a list of people in mind. It'd be surprising if Maresca wasn't on that list. At the same time, that Chelsea team of his just... So I was at Newcastle Chelsea on Saturday. So I re-watched that thriller against West Ham after the event. That was good.
Congratulations. Merry Christmas.
Belter. Yeah, so I had a little Christmas nap. And Chelsea were risable first half, just terrible. And they're such a weird team. I think they've had those games against Barcelona and Arsenal where they look like, oh, these are the most legitimate title challenges to Arsenal. They've barely won a game since. And they just, at the risk of sounding all good football man, they just look soft at times. And obviously it's a load of young players been thrown together in this mad project. And then they came back and showed a lot of quality in the second half. But I don't know. There's nothing about... When I watch that Chelsea team, there's nothing that I think... There's such a clear identity about them that makes you think, I'd want their manager. I don't know. I think... Not sure.
The thing is as well with Maresca is that, like, even if he's not on a list, there's no way that City are going to come out and say no. Like, yeah, they're not going to be like, oh, that, you know, that key part
that
of
guy,
our academy for a few years.
Us, yeah,
yeah. Got all the ability of a pantomime Gibbon, quotas on that. Like, they're just going to sort of say, right, okay. So, like, the story, like, there's no way you can say anything against it, because, like, well, yeah, Pep could leave at the end of the season, and you can't say that Maresca's not on a list, but, like, at the same time, there's a good chance that he doesn't leave at the end of the season, and I think I'd be surprised if Maresca got the job, in part because of, you know, the performances like that Newcastle game. And I was in the City press room when Chelsea were 2-0 down, and I don't know why I said that with such suspense, but they...
If you don't know the score, look away now.
and I looked, and, you know, they've got Villa on the 27th, and then a week later they're at the Etihad, and I'm thinking, well, I think it's Bournemouth at home in between then, and you're thinking, like, well, maybe like 3 defeats in 4, like, it's all very well touting him for the City job. He might be out of a Chelsea job in in a month's time. And I thought it was interesting that Enzo Maresca said in his press conference about it's important to know why this story came out or something like that. And you're like, well, yeah, this guy's sort of started a war he can't win with mystery hierarchical figures at his club. And these figures are sort of don't know what he's why he's decided to do it. And then suddenly Chelsea have got a manager who's so good he's ready to replace Pep. And talks have already gone on. So maybe that's why he's had the freedom to speak out against Chelsea. And it's like, Chelsea have done wonders from this story. Maresca's done wonders from this story. Whereas City have had another day of Pep's leaving, it must be 1-1-5. And you're like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, Merry Christmas, everyone. 1-1-5, I think we're fairly safe to say now, has been delayed until it's at imminent. Least after Christmas.
Yeah. It's imminent.
Yeah. Simon, you were in those press conferences with Guardiola. Just kind of the way he was speaking, I can't put my finger on it, but maybe this is just wishful thinking, but I feel like he's going to extend again, you know.
It's an extender. Do you know what?
I spoke to Fabian Delph a few weeks ago, and he said he could see him doing another 3 or 4 years. Mm. And I was surprised by that comment. But then we've been waiting for him to go at the end of our season for forever, and he just hasn't. But like, there's also no doubt that he absolutely loves working with the team, and like it's as he said in that Friday press conference, like he has won the lot. He doesn't care about that. But like when he's sort of savaging Nico Gonzalez on the pitch at Huddersfield when there are no cameras and no spectators, and you're like, he's not doing this because, like, for the cameras or for anything. He's doing this because he is absolutely addicted to football. Mm. You know, I think there might come a time where he says, no, I do need a rest, or there might be an international job that comes up. And I think an international job would be kind of the biggest sort of possibility that he does leave at the end of this season, if one of those came up after the World Cup. But he's got such fire and energy back, and everyone you speak to at the training ground said this season he's just had it again, and he's got a young team again who look capable of winning trophies again. And when you compare this Pep to the guy 12 months ago who'd gone through like Feyenoord and United and Spurs at home and Juventus and like was just so desolate, like it's a hell of a transformation.
Yeah, it's crackers and cheese, isn't it, the difference? Dom, well, it's chalk and cheese, isn't it? But yeah, I was trying to make it Christmassy. It's just not working, is it?
They go well together.
Just picking up on what Simon said there, like when do you ever think Guardiola will feel like the job is done at City? Because if it's about improving players, they've basically just bought a new squad.
You could have said that Hugo Viana's making a list and he's checking it twice. But anyway... I think with Pep, there's always been this thing that he wants some sort of element of a feeling of completion. You know, to going way back to 18-19, when there was like they won the domestic treble and there was the Sterling non-goal against Tottenham.
I thought you meant the year then.
Yeah. But yeah, it was the night before Christmas.
My history is not that good. I couldn't tell you anything that happened in the year 1819.
Yeah, he's been brushing up on his Croatian history from that period, talking to Cisco Bono. No, but like at that time, like there was those pretty well-placed speculation that if City had won the lot that year, he might have gone then just to go, well, sort of in a completed it, mate, kind of way. At the same time, there was a lot of talk around the contract extension last year that part of the motivation for the 2-year extension was they were in such a mess and he didn't want to leave them like that. Now, so I wouldn't profess to know exactly what this is. I mean, I thought after Istanbul he would have wanted another Champions League, but things went so far south last year that feels further away than it has for a while. And maybe after that season last year, winning one more Premier League would actually be the perfect sign-off. But yeah, it's that art's never finished, it's merely abandoned sort of thing. You know, his football team, Guardiola's never going to have a finished football team, but I think he'll want to arrive at a point that it feels like things are done. And I don't think he's there with this team right now at all.
Yeah, I should have, before I opened my mouth about events of 1819, I should have double checked, because being a proud Mancunian, should have probably realised that that was the year of the Peterloo Massacre. But not very festive, so we will move on. City briefly went top of the table this week, but Arsenal's win over Everton.
Emily Pankhurst, wow, guys.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, and we're very sorry about that.
City briefly went top of the table this week, but Arsenal's win over Everton meant that it was the Gunners who are Christmas number one this year. As if the build-up to Christmas isn't busy enough, I spent the weekend digging through the history books to work out a load of stats about City and Christmas Day. The first time City had a brush with being top of the Premier League at Christmas was down to some good fortune and some bad weather. In a very cold winter in 2010, City had played a couple of games more than their rivals at the top because of postponements, and it gave them a chance to lead the way at Christmas.
So City against Everton in December 2010, it was the last game before Christmas, and our big chance to go top of the league with a win. It would have been the first time in 81 years, and certainly my lifetime, that City would have been top of the top flight at Christmas. The day started really well. I remember finding out on the way to the game that Carlos Tevez had withdrawn the transfer request he'd made earlier in December after having cleared the air talks with the club and Roberto Mancini. So it was really positive start to the night, and he captained City in this game.
They're the memories of City fan Dan Burke. That year, Manchester United and Arsenal were ahead of City in the table, and both already had at least one game in hand. The weekend before Christmas, both of them had their matches called off because of heavy snowfall, leaving City with the chance to leapfrog them into first by beating Everton. So obviously, they lost 2-1.
The worst thing about the game was how cold it was. It's by far the coldest I've ever been at a football match. I felt like my feet were blocks of ice. It was horrible. And walking out of the stadium at the end was actually painful just to walk. I spoke to Ian Irving from Premier League Productions a few years later, and he told me that he was pitch-shied that night. And one of the pitch-shied cameras actually froze and couldn't be used. It was so cold. And this was during the time when players were still allowed to wear snuds before they got banned. Carlos Tevez used to wear a snud, and Yaya Toure did as well, and Yaya actually pulled his snud up over his ears, like if you imagine like a sort of shawl that an old lady would wear. He looked like that. It was just typical City in the fact that, you know, a win would have put them top at Christmas, and they couldn't quite do it. And Roberto Mancini said afterwards that Tevez's transfer request withdrawal had been the only good news of the night, and that it certainly felt that way.
That was a missed opportunity, but if we're being honest, City weren't really title contenders that year, even though they would go on at the end of the season to win the FA Cup. 12 months later, though, they definitely were in the mix. They went top in mid-October and were still there on Christmas Day, thanks to a 3-0 win over Stoke at the Etihad. Roberto Mancini spoke about it to the BBC.
Well, I'm satisfied, but I think that we did 44 points till now, and we have only 2 points over United. I think that usually if you do 44 points, you should have maybe 5-6 points over the second team.
That was the first time that City have been top of the Premier League at Christmas, and they went on to win the title that year. After Mancini, only Pep Guardiola has led the side to Christmas number one in the Premier League era, and his first time was a special one. That's because it was the earliest it had ever been confirmed.
We won because we were better in all departments. We were better. We were strong. We tried to keep playing, and we came here like we were in the Stamford Bridge, and all the games since I came here to try to win, to make our job, and I'm so happy with the people say in England you cannot play in that way. In England, can play in that way as well.
That was Guardiola speaking after winning the Manchester Derby on the 10th of December 2017. It was the year that City would go on to get 100 points, and they knew that they would be top at Christmas 15 days early. Guardiola's City would be league leaders for the festive period just once more, and that was in 2021. In all three of the seasons that they've led the Premier League at Christmas, City have gone on to win the title. Weirdly though, before the Premier League was formed, City had never won the top flight when leading at Christmas, failing in 1903, 1912 and 1929. But what about when City are not leading at Christmas? How has that worked out recently? The answer is actually pretty well. The last five times the title winners weren't the Christmas number one were titles won by City, as Arsenal twice and Liverpool three times fell short in the second half of the season after leading the way in December. It's a run that goes back to Christmas Day 2013. Over the entirety of the Premier League era, only Manchester United have won more titles when not being top at Christmas than City have as well. And even going back further, City's titles in 1937 and 1968 were won when they hadn't been top at Christmas. In those days, City would often play on Christmas Day as well.
The last one was in 1957 against Burnley. We lost, which we tended to do on Christmas Day, unfortunately. But this was sort of typical of the way the Christmas games used to work, because you'd play home or away on Christmas Day, and then the next day, quite often, you'd play the same team again at the other ground. So the last Christmas Day game was against Burnley at Turf Moor, which wasn't a happy place for us. It was a 2-1 defeat. And then the next day, Burnley came to Main Road and we beat them 4-1. These were quite often were perceived as big, important sort of derby matches as well.
That's football historian Gary James. The last time City won on Christmas Day was in 1954, 3-1 over Newcastle at Main Road. They are one of nine teams that City have beaten on December the 25th, with Birmingham the only side that City have beaten twice on that date. Given it's Christmas, you might have thought that the fixtures would mainly have been local derbies, but that wasn't the case.
Chelsea is the sort of furthest we've travelled on Christmas Day, but in 1946-47, we played Plymouth at home on Christmas Day, which we won 4-3, and then the next day, we're actually away at Plymouth. I think the two teams actually travelled down to Plymouth together on a train overnight, maybe, on Christmas Day. Now, we talk about over Christmas period, you expect a lot of travel to shut down. Boxing Day is a nightmare to get anywhere. And certainly Christmas Day was out of the question trying to get anywhere. But these football teams, at a time when there wasn't widespread sort of coach travel or anything like that, I expected to travel from one end of the country to the other.
City's record on Christmas Day is pretty poor, winning only 10 of their 36 games. But their record of being in the relegation zone at Christmas and then surviving is, strangely, pretty good. They've been in the drop zone on the 25th of December eight times in their history, going down just twice. That was in 1986-87 and in 1901-02, when they were bottom on Christmas Day and then finished bottom the following April. The most recent time they were in the bottom three at Christmas was in 2008, 3 months after the takeover, following a 2-1 defeat at West Brom.
Moore wants it back, Moore gets it back, he's never scored for West Brom, he has now! Mate tried to get a touch onto that, a little bit of confusion as Casado backheels it, and it's gone in! What a remarkable goal that is! They're now going for it.
That defeat leaving City in 18th on Christmas Day. Even in performing badly that year though, City were able to claim a strange Premier League first. By recovering to finish 10th in 2008-09, City are the first and so far only team to ever be in the Premier League's relegation zone at Christmas and then end the campaign in the top half of the table. All this goes to prove is that it doesn't really matter what the table looks like when you sit down to open your presents or dig into the turkey sprouts and roasties, which probably makes this a complete and total waste of the last 8 minutes.
Hello, my name is Gerard Weekens, a former player of Manchester City, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
A look at City on Christmas Day there. Dom, you brought Sean Dyche's record to my attention about when City faced Nottingham Forest this week. I didn't realise, but you've also been speaking about it to the Manager's Podcast recently.
We're at Burnley and our record at Man City is awful. I think we were going for the record number of times that any team got beat 5-0 on the trot, right? Yeah. And we got a 2-0, I was high-fiving. And, so I know before one of the games, because we tried everything, you know, tactics, you know what it's like. So before one of the games, I'd do this list like a PowerPoint without screen and then put the team on. You know, you put it, say, 4-4-2, 4-4-1-1 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So this game, I said to the analyst, I said, put everyone. I said, so they put the team up and I put 4-4-2 up. And then I said, this is the game plan. And I basically got the 6-yard put and put every player in the 6-yard box. I just went, that's the game plan, lads. All the best.
What was the result?
5-0, we got beat. I swear, I couldn't believe it. I can't even laugh my way to some form of result against Man City.
There we go. That feels prime for HMRC of football to come along and double check a few facts in there, but we'll leave that to them.
Can I check one? Did you really try everything tactically, Sean? Did you really? I mean, I saw a few of those games. I'm not sure he tried everything tactically. And I think that's why those games always ended the same way. Yeah,
yeah. A few of those games. His record against City's played 21-1, drawn 3, lost 16. He didn't actually lose in his first two meetings with City, so it's 16 defeats in the last 18. And he drew the last meeting 1-1 with Everton. And obviously, Forest, a bit of a weird entity this season. So, like, what are you expecting from this? I mean, assuming the players haven't all come back fatty, Dom, what are you expecting from this?
I mean, so the it's interesting with Dyche and Pep, because like he was one of these big beasts along like with cold Tuesday nights at Stoke and stuff that Pep was never maybe wouldn't be able to hack it with. And he has, if you compare to, I mean, it's weird at the weekend because West Ham were so poor, but generally, Nuno as a defensive, reactive manager has made life really difficult for Pep. Dyche never really has panned out that way. I mean, there was a few of those games at Burnley, like, and the famously, we go to Burnley, we go to the dentist, and that game was like that brutal 1-0 in the run-in in 2018-2019. But now it's like, if you're going to the dentist, it's like, Pep's flossed, he's got a new electric toothbrush. It's like everything's looking spick and span. He's using mouthwash. It's great. It's one of them trips to the dentist. It's like, oh, great, cool. Come back again in 6 months. Fine. They're very easy.
Forest, Simon, have won 6 of the last 9. City have 7 wins in a row. So how, like, we're talking as if this isn't necessarily going to be tricky, but it could be tricky.
It will be tricky. It will be sticky. I think it's going to be, you know, a scratchy, horrible 12:30. Everyone's had a week off and no one can remember how to play football again game. Mm. And Forest will be one of those trickier opponents for City in that they're very well organised defensively, but they also have genuine pace that can threaten them in counter-attacks. One thing I think City have been better at this season is scoring early in games. And just kind of changing or reducing that feeling of, oh, this is going to be a difficult game by like, oh, Haaland's just stuck one in the 15th minute, that kind of thing. And that kind of just gives them a bit more confidence and gives them control of the game. So if City can get an early goal, I think they might have a comfortable afternoon. I mean, the one thing they can rely on is Chris Wood will miss 8,000 chances if he plays, because that's usually what he does against City, despite being good. Otherwise, although I don't think he's had much of a look in this season.
Yeah. We touched on it earlier, Dom. Seven days since West Ham. So, I mean, he's that is prime Guardiola is going unchanged again. But especially with injuries and the AFCON going on, there's not really that many changes he could make realistically, is there?
Yeah, remember Pep Roulette? He'll pick the same team, won't he? I was kind of, and again, this is scratching for interesting things at West Ham when I was watching it back. Nunes ending up in midfield when he made those sort of subs to solidify it a bit. Now obviously Kovacic been out and Rodri, we don't know when Rodri will be back. He's been a couple of weeks away for a while. Nunes been a bit more of an option there now since he's played at right back and is more attuned to what City do. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing I expect to see maybe in the FA Cup rather than here. I think the other one, and I know I just said he could spend the festive period eating Yule log, but the way I'm interested to see how Rico Lewis might get used, the way that Bernardo has done this thing quite a bit in this period where he, like, he plays right back in the build-up, but then he presses quite high. And, like, Lewis is someone who's a midfielder, good in, you know, the pockets, as Pep would say, and also quite energetic. I wonder if, like, I'm keen to see Rico play some games in that Bernardo role, because I think he could do that job. But again, it's not going to happen at Forest away, is it? It might happen, you know, again. Another one for Exeter, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would it be better, Dom, if City, if Forest chose not to press high and to low block as Dyche has done in the past? Because less pressure on the build-up, less pressure on Donnarumma's distribution, that sort of thing?
I mean, he has tried everything, so we can't presume to know how a Sean Dyche team will play against Pep. But yeah, they will, and that will take the pressure off Donnarumma, and it's... The good, like Si said, that like it can be a bit, oh God, no one's played football for a week. You had a few days off. I think what is handy for this game is there's not going to be any surprises. They know the football game they're going to get involved in, and some of it might be a bit minging, but yeah, I think it should work fine.
Yeah, I mean they've been pretty good at coming through those bit minging moments this season, Simon, as well. When they've needed to just dig in and head the ball away or Donnarumma punch it away, they've kind of just got on with it.
Yeah. Again, it's been a major strength and a major improvement, and they've done very well at what you would think are some of the most horrible grounds to go to. 3-0 at Palace, clean sheet at Brentford. Only that late Arsenal equaliser at the Emirates. So, you know, looking forward to Anfield. But you would count Forest as a ground that has not been nice for City to go to. Hmm. But this team do feel a lot like they don't really care about those things anymore.
Yeah. It's four clean sheets out of five now as well. And you think it's not that long ago they had that mad period where they were conceding every 10 minutes.
Yeah, and like, you know, I think Nico O'Reilly could probably play in the middle of the apocalypse and look quite unflustered by it all. he just sort of wanders about and still keeps possession while the horsemen are going past him. So they just learn to be a bit less caring, I suppose, about the things that could trip them up and... just focus. It's one of those things, like the squad now, like all the players in, have nowhere near the reputations that you Kevin De Bruyne's and Gundogan's had. So there's not as much to lose for them, but a lot more to gain. And I think you're seeing that kind of youth and hunger and ambition for trophies in the team this season that is really helping them.
Yeah, how are you imagining the apocalypse going? Is it like a zombie film with the dead rising up and everything going on? Like the sky falling in, you know, fireballs from the sky, that sort of thing?
It's a cross between like a Simpsons thing and maybe like Stranger Things, Vecna's house, like, you know, Nico O'Reilly doing the run to Kate Bush, I suppose.
Such a good festive episode, this.
Yeah.
And Cyanide, the Peterloo Massacre and the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to mix it up sometimes, haven't you? That's been one of City's strengths this season.
Raise your hand if you want your nails to look perfect all the time. Me too. I'm Sarah Gibson-Tuttle from Olive & June, and this is exactly why we created the Manny System. We wanted to make it possible for everyone everywhere to give themselves a beautiful manicure at home. With our tools and our long-lasting polish, each manicure with our Manny system comes out to just $2. That's right, $2. No more $30, $40, $50 manis that you get at a salon and they take hours. Now you can paint your nails on your time and love them more than ever. And by the way, when people ask, who did your nails? Where did you get them done? You're going to proudly say, I did them myself. Get 20% off your first Manny system with code DIYNAIL20 at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20. That's code DIYNAIL20 for 20% off at oliveandjune.com/DIYNAIL20.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
We'll get predictions shortly, but first I've been speaking to journalist and Forest fan Nick Miller to try and work out what on earth they are this season.
It's been a season of about five halves. I don't know. You don't know where to start. We don't know where to start either. It's been such a weird season. It's this from the kind of optimism of the summer and, you know, in Europe for the first time. By the time, you know, obviously towards the end of last season, there was this kind of weird, slight disappointment that Forest hadn't gotten the Champions League. But then that was kind of overtaken by, well, Europe, that's still good. And then the whole sort of sorry business with Palace and which European competition we were going to be in. And then kind of then after that was made clear, there's this kind of spending spree where we signed all these players and we were very optimistic about some of them. Then season, like in the eve of the season, Nuno kind of drops this big bag of poo on everyone and decides that he's not happy with the signings. And then he goes and we're all very sad about that. Then the kind of 39 days of Ange, which still feels like a bit of a fever dream. And then this kind of, for me, anyway, this kind of quite emotionally conflicting appointment of Sean Dyche, who I've never been a fan of particularly as a sort of persona or his football, but with a recognition that it was absolutely necessary, that there's no kind of there wasn't really anyone else who, besides bringing Nuno back, there wasn't really anyone else who could plausibly fix this mess. And, you know, as I'm sure we'll go on to talk about, so far fix it he has. So yeah, extremely strange season.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just had a look at the league table from the point at which Ange was sacked, and Nottingham Forest in the relegation zone, 5 points, three off the bottom, two from safety at the time after eight games. And then you kind of look at how it's gone since. I mean, 18 points, a game in hand over the bottom three, which is going to be played in that confusing period. We're talking before that game in hand is played because it's Monday night, but we don't have time to do it after then. Like, how are things feeling right now? Because you look at the teams around you. I mean, City have just played West Ham, and West Ham were abject in that game. Burnley have looked abject. Wolves are pretty much a goner. Leeds up and down, hit a bit of form recently, but like it doesn't feel like they're maybe as stable as Forest might be. Is this a bit of a false position?
It's in the Liga at the moment. Yeah, it is a false position. As you said, we're sort of recording this before Forest play Fulham on Monday night, so don't know how that goes. But yeah, I think before I looked at a table made up of games since Dyche was appointed. Before this weekend, I think Forest were fifth or sixth or something. So you know, it's been quite a turnaround, and I think everyone's pretty optimistic with the sort of caveat that there have been, you know, poor performances, bad results, losing 3-0 Everton. It was one of those games where, you know, aside from people's trousers falling down in the middle of the game, everything that could go wrong kind of thing. Started badly, tailed off in the middle, and the less said about the ending, the better kind of thing. Mm. But other than that, the results have been really good. But I think the more surprising thing is that and if I may plug some of my work on The Athletic,
please
shamelessly
do.
I've written a piece about that this week about how the football's actually been, for the most part, pretty good. Like, it passes kind of the eye test where there's some really nice passing football, some good moves, some really good goals being scored. And there's a structure to the play. And if you look at the statistics as well, there's fewer long balls, higher possession, more goals being scored than kind of pretty much any other point in Dyche's career. So for the people who were, reluctant to embrace, but recognizing that Dyche was a necessity, like me, who kind of feared that Forest would be fine, they wouldn't get relegated, they'd probably finish a sort of fairly grim 16th or something. It's been a fairly pleasant surprise, really. And this is sort of my slash our problem more than anything else, because Dyche has pretty much always said he's managed to the conditions and the resources that he's had. So at Burnley and Everton, he didn't have much money, and the players that the money was spent on were generally not flair players. But he's taken over a squad that was, but for the talent in it, was in a false position when he arrived. And, you know, it's had near enough £200 million spent on it in the summer, about three quarters of which were on attackers and, you know, flair players as well, which is to, and then you add that to Morgan White and Elliot Anderson and to a lesser extent Callum Hudson-Odoi. And it's not a surprise that they are playing decent football and getting results. And Dyche, I think that the line I had in the piece was that it shows that he's the kind of pragmatist in the true sense of the word, because in football, that word generally is used as a kind of, yeah, the football's awful, but you'll get results kind of thing. But whereas it actually means adapting to the situation, adapting to the circumstances around you. And that's what he's done, really. And it's, you know, there have been enough little problems that if they are magnified, then it could still all go quite wrong. And, you know, they've managed so far to cope with the kind of Thursday, Sunday thing with Europe by essentially getting away with playing reserve teams in Europe because the opposition hasn't been up to much. That might kind of go down the pan later on in the season. But at the moment, optimism's pretty high, really.
Yeah. What will City get on when they go to the City Ground? What will they be up against? Because, I mean, it feels odd, but it feels like you've had three different styles of teams so far this season. You had the Ange Postecoglou era with the high line and kind of high pressing era. Nuno a bit more pragmatic, and I mean, Dyche kind of, as you say, similar off that mould. How do you think he'll approach it?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, I mean, the way that he will approach is very similar to the game against the away game against Liverpool, and there is there's a sort of slight caveat where Arnslot kind of stopped doing it now, but there was that period around then where Arnslot couldn't stop talking about how you beat Liverpool, which was just really weird. He was just kind of going on about how, oh yeah, of course all these teams are playing long balls against us and we can't really cope with that, so what can you do? And so to kind of almost not quite contradict, but to go against the stuff I was saying mere seconds ago about the football being quite good in that game, it was a little bit more kind of, you know, liquid Dyche stuff. It was no sort of fancy mucking around playing passes out the back. It was get it launched and hold the ball up, take advantage of defensive errors, and then keep it tight at the back. So while it's not quite as an obvious strategy as it was against Liverpool, against City, I think that'll probably be the way he goes. Be quite interesting to see what team he puts out, because I think he'd like to have had someone like Ibrahim Sangare in midfield, but he's gone away to AFCON just at the kind of frustrating moment where he's in the best form of his Forest career. I think he would like to play in these kind of games. He has played midfield and Nico Dominguez on the wing as a sort of like Dirk Kuyt style shuttling working winger. But he's been injured a little bit, so I don't know whether he'll be available. So it will be quite interesting to see what team he puts out. But I think broadly speaking, it will be a kind of fairly similar, you know, don't play into the hands of the opposition. We are going to play a little bit more, you know, ugly is maybe an unkind word, but I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be the most free flowing. We certainly won't be able to play as they did against Tottenham, who were the other week, who were very, very accommodating.
Yeah. How's City Ground been? Because it's, again, three different eras. I understand, you know, when Postecoglou was around and games were not going well, like, the atmosphere gets toxic. I've been there at Main Road myself back in the day. But the results are getting better. So how is the Forest Ground right now?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the crowd becoming so toxic so quickly as in the kind of brief Postecoglou era. And it was, not only was it it became toxic quite quickly, it almost went through the sort of state, not quite the stages of grief, but the stages of supporter anger very quickly as well. Because he was an appointment that not many people wanted, replacing a guy that everyone loved. So he was on a, you know, he had, wasn't great from the start. And I think it maybe was his, he was relatively unlucky in as much as he had, I think his first three games or first four games were all away, and they didn't really go very well. So by the time he got to a home game, then people were already a little bit iffy about him. That home game was against Midtjylland in the Europa League, and they lost 3-2, but it was one of those where there was a Forest second goal was a penalty in like injury time or something like that. So that it was a bit of a false scoreline.
It was basically 3-1, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And it was horrible that night. I was in the ground as a punter that day, and it was vile. Like, there was a chance of the obvious stuff about getting sacked in the morning, but some quite personal stuff about Postecoglou as well. And then by the last game, which was he only managed for 8 games, his last game against Chelsea, it was a sort of, bollocks to this is terrible. It's not even like not even angry, just kind of resigned to the fact that this was crap and it probably wasn't going to get better, with the sort of, well, there's no point in getting too angry about this because he's going to be gone soon. And as it turns out, he was gone I think it was precisely 17 minutes after the final whistle.
I was going to say, certainly before the press conferences, wasn't it? Yeah.
I could probably tell you exactly when it was, because I was working that day and the little message popped up about 30 seconds before I was supposed to file my article. So that wasn't brilliant for me. But anyway, but yes, so since then, I think I was probably in the minority in people who were not quite on board with the Dyche idea. I think everyone recognised that it was necessary, and then from there was a sort of split between people who were enthusiastic about what he might do, probably as a reaction to Postecoglou, and then people who are like maybe a little bit more sceptical. But the atmosphere has been great, really. I mean, and the City game will be Forest's first home game since the best performance under Dyche, best performance all season, among the best performances since Forest came up against, again, an admittedly very accommodating Tottenham the last week, when Forest won 3-0 and played some brilliant football, scored some beautiful goals. So, yeah, the mood's pretty good, really. And the, you know, doing pretty well in Europe, looking unlikely that they get relegated, which was a kind of a real long shot a couple of months ago. So yeah, everyone's pretty happy.
Yeah. Who's playing well at the minute? Who's likely to cause City problems? Because, I mean, I remember speaking to a couple of Forest fans about, for instance, the signing of James McAtee in the summer, and saying, actually, I think he'll be a great signing for you. And then I have a look at kind of how he's doing. It doesn't seem to be in the team. So, like, what's going on? Who's playing well and who's not?
Well, McAtee's an interesting one. I thought he was the kind of the perfect signing for Forest, because he would play a couple of roles, in as much as, you know, he'd be a play on the right, coming in on his left foot, and then he'd also be a bit of a relief for Gibbs White as well when he needed rest. But he hasn't played very much. He's played in Europe and he hasn't played very well, to be honest. He's looked like a player who gets, you know, 60 minutes every 3 weeks, which is pretty much what he is. He's not, I think he's come off the bench that many times. So that is a bit of a shame. He's not kind of necessarily helped by the fact that Amari Hutchinson, one of the other new signings, has looked really good in the last month or so, initially as kind of impact player off the bench, but he's been starting. But in the last few weeks, probably Forest's best player, as I mentioned before, was Sangare, but he is away at AFCON with Ivory Coast, which is, from a Forest perspective, a real shame, because he was he was kind of Forest record signing when he signed 2 years ago, and has never looked, hadn't looked right for the whole time that he was there up until this season, really, and he's looked brilliant. But probably the two, also Gibbs White has been, he started the season off very slowly and has gradually been looking more like himself. But the kind of two ones, the one that everyone will know about, Elliot Anderson, Forest fans, I think, are very much in the kind of let's enjoy him while he's here phase now, because there's a sort of recognition that, you know, he is a phenomenal footballer who should, who deserves to be playing at a higher level, deserves to be playing the Champions League, deserves to be playing at the top of the Premier League. And, you know, even though he is doing, Forest is doing better at the moment, he needs to, you know, he will, someone will pay a huge amount of money for him in the summer. Don't know who that will be. You know, I hope it's not Manchester United, because, you know, you never like to see the beautiful flowers wither and die on the vine, do you? So yeah, he's incredible. He's, you know, two or three midfielders in one, and he will cause whoever he plays against a lot of problems. The other one, maybe slightly less well known and kind of headline-y, is Igor Jesus, who's a striker that Forest signed from Botafogo in the summer. He's not scored that many goals. I think he's got seven in all competitions, six, seven. I think he's only got one in the league, but he's a real, the absolute epitome of, he looks like a pain in the ass to play against for a central defender. He's a centre forward. He's not that tall, but he's very strong. He runs all day. He will hold the ball up really well. He will kind of back in and little pushes and shoves, and he will bring other players into play, which is perfect for Forest when the kind of attacking three behind him are playing well, which they are at the moment. So yeah, he Igor Jesus might not score against City. He probably won't score that, you know, he won't be prolific for the rest of the season, but he is the kind of one of the form players at the moment. Yeah. So yeah, he'll cause some problems, I think.
Yeah, I just had a look at his Wikipedia page and saw born 2001 and thought, oh, young lad, and then realised that no, not anymore.
No, those days are gone, I'm afraid, David.
Yeah. We've got the charity bet coming up, Nick. We have had an absolute torrid time predicting City's scores this season. We've only had two correct so far all season, so we kind of need a bit of help here. What's your score prediction for this one? How's it going to go?
I think, having said all that about Forest being really good and playing the best football of you know, the last couple of years, blah blah blah, I think probably a narrow City win, maybe two. I'll go 2-1, I think.
You're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
Nick Miller there. Now, we were one goal away from another win on Saturday on the charity bet, but sadly, nobody was correct for West Ham. William Hill has given us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. And the winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. For the final time in 2025, let's see if we can't improve our £135 takings so far. Nick's gone for a 2-1 City win. That's 13-2 and £65 if he's right. Simon, what are you having?
I'm having 2-0. £135 is rubbish, isn't it?
It's risable, isn't it, so far this season? Yeah.
We
have been crap so far. But I don't do many predictions these days, so well, not on me.
Yes. Yeah. I've gone 2-0.
2-0. 15-2 and £75 if you are right. Dom, over to you. What are you having?
I've got 3-0 just on the count of they've been winning a load of games 3-0 lately, and it's the old Mick McCarthy logic. They can't win 3-0 again, can they?
Well, if it works in the Centurion season, I won about three in a row by just going 2-1 because they kept winning 2-1 for a bit. So yeah, it's a good tactic. 11-1 and £110 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org. Just one quick listener question to finish this week. Get in touch on Blue Sky at bluemoonpodcast.com. The email address is contact@bluemoonpodcast.com as well. This one came in on Instagram, so just search for us on there. You can send us a message. Dom has been in touch, perhaps in honour of Father Christmas, to say, who has the best beard in the City team?
It's Guardiola, isn't it?
Is it that simple, cut and dry?
I mean, I don't know how he shaves, but yeah. yeah, it's it's a magnificent beard, isn't it? Like, it's very thick. And like, for like, I mean, as a guy who's on the cusp of 40 and can't scare up decent facial hair, Guardiola's like, what, 23 or something. It's just, it's a dense, impressive bit of work. Yeah.
Yeah. Simon, anybody else you can even think of from the past, maybe?
If we're diving into this subject, which I suppose we are, Guardiola's is the best aesthetically, but if you're thinking about the best, maybe as a Father Christmas, I reckon Bernardo Silva could give it a go.
There's a wispiness, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I was thinking, like, from the past, I was thinking if you were going to properly go Father Christmassy and go for the long beard, then, like, Otamendi is someone that I think of. Like, if Otamendi were to dye it white, you'd be able to maybe get the length in it.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Can Donnarumma looks a bit like one of those, I don't know the word, one of those Christmas soldiers, do we call them? Drummer boys?
Oh, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Can you
is that
imagine?
The baggy shirt, though, that does it? The length of the baggy shirt?
Yeah.
Can you imagine putting Nicolas Otamendi in charge of flying reindeers? Good heavens.
And certainly swoop.
Yeah. If you've got any suggestions of... I mean, the other thing as well before I finish, did you see Rodri getting his hair cut this week? The barber's posted a video, and then just as, like, it's like a promo thing for the barber, but just as he goes in to make the first cut, Rodri, like, the video cuts to Rodri scoring the Champions League winning goal. It's just, like, really odd.
Isn't that a very, very normal haircut he has to be promoting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're going to do a normal haircut really well, then crack on and promote it by all means. But it was just the sudden gear change to the Champions League final goal that it just took me completely by surprise. Right. Well, if we have missed any of your favourite bearded City players, do get in touch at Blooming Podcast on Blue Sky, contact at bloomingpodcast.com. But for now, that is it for this episode of the Blooming Podcast. Thank you very much to my guests, Dom Farrell.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
And Simon Bakowski.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Keep an eye on your feeds on Christmas Day, because the annual Blue Moon Podcast Christmas quiz will be landing on Thursday. Dom was one of the contestants alongside Amos Murphy, KC, Chris Higginbottom, Richard Burns and Dan Burke. And it's all sorts of fun and games around City past and present. With City playing on New Year's Day next Thursday, we'll have the next episode of the podcast proper on Tuesday again next week. And we'll be looking ahead to matches with Sunderland, Chelsea and Brighton. So a lot to pack in there. Have a great Christmas and see you next time.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.